Good evening. A bill is introduced in the City Council to guarantee housing for homeless people, a memorial for those killed by racial violence on the steps of City Hall, and progressive Jewish people and their supporters rally against the Republicans. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo for the WBAI Evening News for October 31st, 2018. Donald Trump says the number of military troops deployed to the U.S.-Mexican border could go as high as 15,000. Playing to his base, he says the move would be aimed at preventing the entry of a caravan of migrants traveling from Central America. The caravan is still nearly 1,000 miles from the U.S. border. Meanwhile, the caravan with thousands of Central American migrants has advanced 250 miles into Mexico, but they are hoping they won't have to walk anymore. They're trying to negotiate the use of buses to carry the migrants hundreds of miles ahead. And a mafia hitman who is said to hate rats is under suspicion in the slaying of former Boston crime boss and longtime FBI informant James Whitey Bulger, who was found dead hours after he was transferred to a West Virginia prison. The former official said that Fotios Freddy Gias and at least one other inmate are believed to have been involved in Bulger's killing. Authorities have not disclosed the cause of death. Rafael Salamanca, a councilman from the Bronx, introduced legislation today mandating any rental housing project that receives taxpayer subsidy has to set aside 15% of its units for people living in the city's shelter system. Mayor Bill de Blasio has said he's strongly against the proposal. The mayor's current housing policy, Housing New York 2.0, calls for 5% of the 300,000 subsidized units to be set aside for the homeless. But City Council Speaker Corey Johnson and has signaled the 51-member City Council may take the Salamanca bill seriously. At a news conference on the steps of City Hall, Councilmember Salamanca said the city's housing crisis is unacceptable.
Well, that is why we're here today, to make sure that something changes. You're absolutely right, and it is unacceptable. We have over 60,000 families or 60,000 individuals that are going to be sleeping in a homeless shelter tonight. Now, we have a housing crisis, and this council here, if you notice, at every state, we are approving housing developments. So there should be we should be able to codify by law that every developer that's getting $1 from city subsidies, they're setting aside a 15% homeless set-aside. Yeah. Right. Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone. Thank you.
According to the Coalition for the Homeless, there are more than 62,000 people sleeping in New York homeless shelters each night. The main cause is a lack of affordable housing, and 58% of homeless people are African American, 31% Latino, and 7% are white. There are more than 22,000 children sleeping in city shelters every night. The director for organizing of Neighbors Together, a Brooklyn-based soup kitchen and advocacy center, is Amy Bloomsack. She says people throughout the city are suffering.
Over 40% of our members are homeless, and it is the biggest crisis that people in New York City are facing. It is an epidemic, and low-income New Yorkers are suffering. They're suffering, and homelessness is so awful and so traumatic, and, you know, unless you're in the system, it's really hard to understand how difficult it is. And given how much development is happening in the city, the mayor should make good on his promise to really address the Tale of Two Cities. Really do more to fix the homelessness crisis by setting aside 10% of his affordable housing plan. And also, you know, Councilmember Salamanca's bill is really amazing. We need to be doing more in every part of the city to find units for homeless people to move into.
Becoming homeless can have a lot of causes. Sometimes it's just bad luck and an unforgiving system. A homeless person for 5 years, Harold Alexis, says his journey began when he was $100 short on his rent.
I was living in a co-op in the Bronx called Concourse Village. I lived in there most of my life. My mother had passed away about a year earlier. She passed away in 2011. I took on the apartment, hoping to keep it. And before you know, within months later, I fell short by $100 in my rent. My rent was $945. I got sued, unfortunately. And then I went to court. I tried to fight it, and I didn't win. And then I ended up being homeless. I've been homeless now for 5 years. I've lost a lot of belongings. I've been in 5 different shelters.
Alexis says he'd like to go to the Halloween parade tonight, like thousands of other New Yorkers, but he can't go because of his curfew.
We have a curfew, and we also have case manager. I'm going through a change of case managers, and you have to get special permission to get passes. And at my age, I shouldn't feel that I have to be subjected to this this foolishness. I should be able to have freedom, go to an apartment to live, and to be able to change, and be able to just do as I need to do as a human being.
A co-organizer of Wednesday's news conference was vocal. The group focuses on the opioid crisis and how that contributes to the housing crisis. Joanda Williams is lead organizer for Vocal. He says homelessness is a throwback to a barbaric past.
It's a reflection of the power of developers, of moneyed people. And the reality is that we are trying to build a movement of people experiencing homelessness all across the city and across the state, honestly, to address these issues. I think for far too long, people experiencing homelessness are, you know, left in the shadows. But what we recognize is that homelessness should be a relic of a barbaric past, and that's the work that we're doing to advance that reality. And this one affordable housing set aside expansion is a part of a greater vision to truly transform the way that our society treats its people.
The housing crisis in New York began to rear its head in the 1980s with economic changes wrought by the Reagan administration. The numbers of homeless peaked in the late 80s in what seemed like a lot, a third of what it is today. Then, a homeless encampment in Tompkins Square Park in years of unrest led the city to increase shelter beds and basically get homeless people off the streets and out of the public eye. But the Coalition for the Homeless says the city is focused too much on the social services side of homelessness and now should focus on housing development. The problem isn't the mental health of homeless people, but the lack of housing. An activist who is transitioning from being homeless is Felix Guzman. He says things went wrong for him because shelters are not homes.
The same exact people that were homeless 30 years ago when I was a child, they're still in the community, still panhandling and such. So obviously there's an issue of like where did the shelter systems go wrong? And they go wrong when they have inept staff, they have corrupt staff, they have no accountability. If you put people in a position of power where they can actually determine if a person has a bed to sleep in at night, things are supposed to be in order. They're not supposed to actually just be, you know, a ramshackle situation. I mean, experiencing what I experienced in the shelter system myself as a resident at Bedford Atlantic, it was insane. Like, three people died of an overdose while I was there. I was seeing rampant drug use. I slept between the crack dealer and the heroin dealer, so there was always foot traffic.
Guzman says psychiatric and drug clinics and social services case officers all have a part of the blame by creating a self-perpetuating bureaucracy tied to the continuation of homelessness.
Some of the clinics that actually are MATs and also psych clinics and pain management clinics are actually adding to the problem of opioids and actually benzo abuse and such. And it turns out that the city has like this interconnected problem of homelessness, mental health, opioid addiction, but it all comes down, and also the prison system. So it's sort of like a domino spinning all the way in a circle, just tumbling over and over again in the same exact circle. So, you know, you have to realize that, again, he has helped people. But this is a systemic issue. Yeah, de Blasio. This is a systemic issue where, you know, like, it's ridiculous. Like, to move out of shelter, you have to have the landlords aren't accepting these vouchers. So you're stuck in a situation where you're at the mercy of a housing counselor or, you know, a case manager, the staff, and you're always at a disadvantage. So what can you do except be humble and not make too much noise, or else you'll be transferred and you'll never make any progress. It really is a situation that is, seems like it's a dog chasing his tail, basically. That's the situation. You never catch up to it because the problem is the system itself.
Since Mayor de Blasio took office in 2014, the city has financed the creation or preservation of 109,000 affordable units, including 8,900 homes for the homeless, although critics point out that the city's definition of affordable requires a minimum income of $30,000 per year, well below the income of the city's most vulnerable. And dozens of progressive Jewish activists and others gathered at Manhattan's Republican Club today to protest the GOP's apparent support of white supremacists and other fascists after a bloody street fight sparked by an alt-right agitator who spoke at the club earlier this month. WBAI's Alana Levinson has this report.
City Police Department, you are unlawfully blocking the entrance to this building and obstructing pedestrian traffic. You are ordered to disperse now to permit the safe flow of pedestrians.
Days after the mass shooting in Pittsburgh that claimed the lives of 11 members of the Tree of Life congregation, progressive Jews met to protest the Republican Party. They say that the GOP's unwillingness to condemn white nationalism plays a large role in the violence that Jews and other targeted groups face. Naomi Hornstein is a granddaughter of Holocaust survivors.
This is why we are here in front of the GOP Metropolitan Club to say that you are emboldening white supremacy, white nationalism, and that we are here to show that we are mourning, that we are in grief, and that we will stand together as a community because we know what is causing this violence.
New York activist Joanna Kaufman.
We've watched as Trump's administration and the GOP has done little about it. In Charlottesville, Nazis marched with swastikas. Nazis marched chanting, "Jews will not replace us," with torches through the night.
The group says Mourner's Kaddish, a prayer service for the dead, outside of the Metropolitan Republican Club. Some sit in front of the doors to the building around a banner that says, "GOP, tell white nationalists they don't have a place in your party." Earlier this month, the Metropolitan Republican Club invited Gavin McGinnis, head of the far-right group The Proud Boys, to speak at their event. Jewish activists say decisions like welcoming McGinnis and constant incitement by far-right politicians against Jewish philanthropist George Soros fan the flames of anti-Semitism within the Republican Party. Soros was one of the targets of the mail bomb threats last week. At the demonstration, Yael Shafritz sits with a set of stones.
In the Jewish tradition, when someone dies, you often go to the grave and graveside and leave stones, and we brought those here today to remember the people that died in the past week. Because it's a direct result of the GOP's white nationalism, white supremacy, and anti-Semitism. And we're going to bang on those doors and ask to be let in to leave those stones and ask that they condemn white nationalism right now.
But demonstrators aren't only honoring victims of the massacre in Pittsburgh. They say that attacks on places of worship hurt many, including those in Muslim, immigrant, and Black communities, and stand with them. The shooter had expressed frustration at the Jewish organization, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, for helping refugees enter the United States. Joanna Kaufman says welcoming the stranger is a Jewish value.
It's the ground from which we stand on when we stand with other people of color, with other people who are being actively persecuted in a country that was supposed to be, from the beginning, a place of refuge. Whether it has been or hasn't been, that is what we want to build together. Anything other than that is just inconsistent with humanitarian values, Jewish values aside. It's random. That's the thing about terrorism. And it was terrorism, let's be super clear. It could have been anywhere. And it has happened here in New York. And mosques have been vandalized and burned to the ground. And Black churches have been shot up or burned to the ground. And so it is happening all over the country and not just to Jews. And it could have been me in Shabbat services on Saturday morning. And it could have been my mom, or it could have been any of my friends who I organize with and who I love. It is close to home.
Kaufman says the best way to ensure safety for the Jewish community is to stand in solidarity with other communities that are targeted by the Trump administration.
As we grieve, we'll continue to move our communities to take action and to stand with other oppressed groups, because we know that our power is standing together.
While the demonstration ends with police arrests and removing activists blocking the doors to the Metropolitan Republican Club, the group continues to chant their message.
We are here! We are here! We are here! We are here!
Alana Levinson, WBAI News, New York.
In related news, the far-right Proud Boys and their founder Gavin McInnes have been banned from Facebook and Instagram. Facebook, which also owns Instagram, says the company takes action against hate groups to keep its communities safe. McInnes responded to the ban, saying that it shows what he calls the left is ramping up hysteria with fake news and censorship ahead of next week's elections. The suspect in the Pittsburgh synagogue massacre was indicted by a federal grand jury Wednesday, and members of a grief-stricken Jewish community endured another round of funerals for victims of one of the worst anti-Semitic attacks in American history. Robert Bowers, a 46-year-old truck driver, was charged in a 44-count indictment with murder, hate crimes, and other offenses that could bring the death penalty. Authorities say he raged against Jews as he gunned down 11 and wounded 6. The indictment came on the second day of a week-long series of funerals for congregants who perished in the mass shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue. One after another, services were held for three more victims: Joyce Feinberg, 75, Melvin Wax, who was in his late 80s, and Irving Younger, 69. Bowers remains jailed without bail ahead of an arraignment scheduled for Thursday. Meanwhile, in New York, the most diverse city in the nation, political leaders and others came together on the steps of City Hall, where flags were flying at half-mast. City Council Speaker Corey Johnson led City Council members and others in a memorial for those killed in Saturday's murderous rampage. He began by mentioning two African-American victims killed by a man in Kentucky who made racist remarks as he shot them a week ago today. He said people, including the speaker himself, are rightfully afraid.
A week ago today, two Americans, Maurice Stallard and Vicki Lee Jones, were killed in a Kroger supermarket in Kentucky by a gunman who was making racist remarks as he went on his shooting spree. Mr. Stallard and Ms. Jones were black, and the gunman was white. Just a few days before that, an explosive device was found at the Westchester home of philanthropist George Soros, a Jewish man, the first of what would be 14 pipe bombs sent to prominent political leaders and media outlets across the country. And on Saturday morning, on the Jewish Day of Rest, the lone gunman entered the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh and slaughtered 14 people. Rose Malinger, Jerry Rabinowitz, Cecil and David Rosenthal, Daniel Stein, Richard Gottfried, Joyce Feinberg, Melvin Wax, Bernice and Sylvan Simon, and Irving Younger. Many of these folks were Holocaust survivors that came to the United States of America. And they were in that synagogue to worship and spend time with their community. They range from 54 to 97 years old. And I am here today to speak out against the hatred that we're seeing across our country. We live in difficult times, and I know that people are afraid. I get afraid. It's awful, and I think it's important to acknowledge that, to acknowledge the pain and the anger. This makes me angry to have to stand here today, but I knew that I wouldn't be standing here alone. When I'm afraid or angry or just worried about the country, it's important to remember that there is more good out there than evil, and that it's important for us to come together in unity. We saw it in Pittsburgh outside of the Tree of Life Synagogue. We saw it at the candlelight vigil at Kroger's in Jeffersontown, Kentucky. And we're seeing it here today at City Hall. We've seen it all across this city the last few days. I know that many of the members here have been going to events at synagogues and in local communities to bring a sense of healing and unity in the wake of what our country is going through. We are united, all of us together, here in Pittsburgh and Kentucky. Whenever they try to divide us, we will gather and push back, and we will not let hate win.
The head of the city council's Jewish caucus, Chaim Deutsch, said we can never forget what happened in Pittsburgh.
This is my ninth unity rally over the last 72 hours. And people ask me, why do we need so many unity rallies? Why not have one big unity rally for the entire city and come together. Why so many? And my response is that we need to be reminded each and every day. We need to be reminded at each and different rally that anti-Semitism is alive and well. Hatred is alive and well. Bias is alive and well. Bigotry is alive and well. And today is my ninth one representing the nine families. And I'm determined to go to two more representing each person that was murdered in Pittsburgh.
Councilman Chaim Deutsch. The councilman added that what happened 80 years ago in Europe is exactly what's happening today.
My father survived three concentration camps, Auschwitz, Mauthausen, and Gerstkirchen. And he retold the stories of what happened to him during the Holocaust. Many of the Jewish New Yorkers are either children or grandchildren of Holocaust survivors. And many of us, if not all, know of a Holocaust survivor. What happened back then is exactly what happened in Pittsburgh. 11 young lives were murdered. Why do I say young lives? They were all senior citizens. And the reason why they are young lives, because their lives were taken away from us.
The mother of teenage yeshiva student Ari Halberstam, who was shot to death in a terrorist attack on the Brooklyn Bridge in 1994, is Devorah Halberstam. She says Jews have been targeted for thousands of years, but the Jewish people have always outlived their enemies.
I will mention Mark Twain here because I was just reading what he said on Saturday when law enforcement came to my house and told me what happened to Pittsburgh. So I will tell you this. Mark Twain said in the late 1800s, he said, I don't know what it is about the Jew. The Romans came and the Romans went. The Greeks came and they went and they all tried to destroy the people, the Jewish people. But the Jew remains. We will survive. I promise you that. I'm here to declare that today. We will remain a people strong and united together with the best people on this earth in the greatest city on this earth with the people behind me. And I'm so proud to hear the unity among every New Yorker and all Americans of every diverse culture. But one thing we need to say, education is what is the greatest importance. I represent the largest institution of Jewish children, so I worry greatly about the children's reaction to all of this. It frightens me. It frightens me to think that my grandchildren are going to synagogue looking over their shoulder and afraid, even though they may not be speaking about them. They are the most vulnerable and they are our future. Nobody in all our conversations and discourse are talking about them. But we need to, and I'm reaching out to the council right here and now, because I know you care about education, that we think about what are we going to do about the kids. We need to talk to them. We need to speak about hatred to them. We need to go throughout the schools, Jewish schools, public schools, the entire Christian schools, every type of school and every ethnic group, and speak to them about hatred, that we need to care about each other. The world exists with all of us.
Ari Halberstam was killed when a Palestinian man, enraged by a mass murder in Palestine by an American Jewish man, opened fire on a bus full of yeshiva students on the bridge. There was at least one person with a Trump t-shirt at today's press conference, and a small group of pro-Trump supporters of the Jewish cause were there, and there was a certain amount of inclusion of everybody who felt hurt by this, including some Trump supporters. Karen, the daughter of Polish Holocaust survivors whose father was killed for being Jewish, recounted her family story and her horror at seeing the same behavior in the United States. She put the blame on President Trump.
As a little girl growing up, my mother would tell stories about living in Poland and how one day they came into her house, they put her on top of some china, and they came in and put a sword in the bed and took my grandfather out and killed him because he was Jewish, and for only that reason. Of course, in the middle of the night, my grandmother and my mother's other siblings came to America and thought that they had come to freedom. And I remember the story over and over again of how they told of their experience in Poland. And you realize that if they had stayed in Poland, they would have been in the Holocaust also. I often wonder what has gone wrong in the United States of America. Never did I think that I would have to see this happening at home in my own country. Kentucky, all over. A couple of years ago, people were killed going to church, praying in the church. And now, these people being killed in Pittsburgh, the two people that were killed in the supermarket. When is this madness going to stop? Enough is enough. And I vow to myself and to everyone that I am going to be a great part of this nonsense stopping. And I plead to the President of the United States of America, watch your words. They are very detrimental. And you have to stop talking like this. Be professional. Act like a President of the United States. You want to come after me? Come after me. But leave my children and my grandchildren alone. And leave the people that believe in their religion and let them pray without fearing being harmed. And that's what I have to say about this whole thing. Stop it, stop it, stop it. And Mr. President, watch your words.
And that was Karen, the daughter of Polish Holocaust survivors whose father was killed for being Jewish. Queens Council member Barry Grodenczyk also targeted Trump. He said the rotten fish of fascism is stinking from the top.
And today we have a president. He was born in Queens, but Queens was not born in him. We are the most diverse place on the face of the earth. I represent a district that speaks well over 100 languages. Recently, we had a street naming, and I believe my brother Danique Miller was there with us. It was the first time that we honored a mosque. In a district, that part of the district that is mostly Jewish. It was a great moment, and that's what Queens is all about. The rhetoric, as Karen just said, has got to stop, and it has to stop from the top. It has to stop from the top, and it has to stop today. We can no longer wait. We have lost hundreds of people to madness and gun violence, Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, bigotry. It has got to stop, Mr. President. We are not going to rest until you change your way of thinking and your discourse. And we are going to remember this next Tuesday. Thank you all for being here today.
Thank you.
In recent days, New York City has stepped up security at public venues. Today, New York Mayor Bill de Blasio and Police Commissioner James O'Neill marked the first anniversary of the truck attack on a lower Manhattan bicycle path. It killed two Americans, a Belgian, and five Argentine tourists. This led to an even greater increase in security for tonight as the city's big Halloween parade kicks off at 8 p.m. And that's some of the news for Wednesday, October 31st, 2018. The news was produced with Linda Perry and Ilana Levinson. It was engineered by Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo in New York.